Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pemble. The beginning of the session is a good opportunity for groups to present to lawmakers their recommendations. On Wednesday morning, veterans organizations are at the Capitol to present issues they want action taken on. Part of their day includes an hour-long ceremony at the Rotunda. The governor and many legislators are in attendance.
I ask you now if you are able to stand for the posting of the colors.
After the flags are mounted, several officials speak, like the Iowa Commission of Veterans Affairs Chair Dan Gannon.
On Veterans Day, November the 11th of last year, I gave a speech at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery regarding the needs of our veterans. In that speech, I stated, I know all of us are so willing to honor our veterans on that special day, but I also think we need to do a lot more than we're doing than just give thank yous. We need to take the next step. How can we do that? Again, how do we take that next step? That means the next step of helping our veterans with their health and financial needs within the state of Iowa. Did you know this? There are over 230,000 veterans in the state of Iowa. This is only 7.4% of the state's population. Out of that number, there are 38,000 disabled veterans, which is only 1.2% of our population. Also, did you know this, that 38,000 disabled veterans, their spouses, and recipients of DIC bring in federal compensation and pension benefits of over $487 million to this great state of ours?
DIC means Dependency and Indemnity Compensation. It's a monetary benefit paid to eligible survivors of military service people.
Which we are trying to use in our discussions with our senators, our representatives that represent each of us to gain more state benefits through our legislature so we can compete with other states where they have, in some cases, better benefits. We want Iowa to be the state of choice for our veterans when they finish their tour of duty or when they retire.
Dan Gannon says veterans organizations have 11 issues they want to bring to the attention of state officials. Speaking after the ceremony, he says one of them is to enact legislation that would instill Americanism and patriotism in grades K through 12.
We don't think that they do a good job in through the K through 12 of teaching military history, which has got to be taught because the kids at that age need to understand the freedoms that their parents have and the freedoms they have. There's a lot of sacrifices, and I think we are slowly getting more and more away from doing that. I mean, there's some schools don't even do the Pledge of Allegiance, and there's some schools do the whole thing. If we can't get something passed, we want to shake up the legislature. Then you need to, especially the education committees, because they're the ones that make decisions. The school boards. If we got a school board that doesn't want to even do the Pledge of Allegiance, why? And don't bring up the fact, well, we might be offended Muslim. That's not the point. You live here in the United States of America. To be a citizen, the things the flag stands for is what you're supposed to be standing for. I'm not putting down your faith or anything or where you came from. You can still do that, but we come first. And we think the schools have gotten completely away from it.
Another issue Gannon wants to press is the flying of the prisoner of war missing in action black flag at all state agencies on 6 holidays. There is already a federal law like this for federal buildings. Last year, a bill to make this happen for state buildings passed 49-0 in the Senate. It was placed in the House's unfinished business, which means it could come up this year. The bill is very specific about the flag flying between the United States and Iowa flag. Gannon says there is resistance in the House to have the POW flag positioned this way.
They said, we'll compromise. We'll fly it underneath the Iowa flag. And I said, no, because that's not the way it's supposed to be flown.
Representative Stephen Holt is the chair of Legislative Veterans Affairs. He's also at this veterans event at the Capitol. Representative Holt says the Iowa flag must come first.
As a veteran who served 20 years in the Marine Corps, You know, veterans are near and dear to my heart, but I believe the appropriate place for that flag is below the state flag and not between the, you know, we are the sovereign in the state. And so that is really the debate that is kind of holding up that issue right now.
This is a position Dan Gannon firmly disagrees with.
That's not proper protocol. I know we can't. The states don't have to do that. But they're trying to appease us. If you go down the interstates, at every rest area, they got the U.S., the Iowa, and the POW flag flying. That's the way they want us to take it. And we're not taking that for now. There's no reason the state of Iowa can't respect our POWs and MIA families. And there's 83,000 across this country, families, that are still have missing ones. And we just want them to respect it. And we tell them, we aren't disrespecting the flag, Iowa flag. We just want 6 days out of the whole year to fly it correctly.
What if it had its own flagpole and it was just the POW
that,
flag?
That would be easier because Prairie Meadows, the way they have three flagpoles. So they have the U.S. flag, they have the POW flag on one, that's the correct way. The Iowa flag has its own pole. And then Prairie Meadows, I think they have a flag. Yeah, and I've said, well, put then in... Then wherever you're going to do that, put up another flagpole and we'll fly it. And will you be okay with that? Well, that's a cost. It's just there's a few people don't want that to change.
Another one of Gannon's legislative issues is to have the legislature or judiciary expand veterans treatment courts. Nationally, they started 10 years ago and have grown to around 300 in the United States. Iowa has one veterans treatment court. It's in Sioux City. It was established in 2015. A veterans treatment court is like a drug court. They are examples of a problem-solving courts, or PSC. This kind of court attempts to address the underlying problems that contribute to criminal behavior and are a current trend in the legal system. For example, if a person has a drug problem, a judge can order them into treatment instead of jail. It's designed to help the problem and prevent recidivism. For some, these kind of courts can seem unfair, but Dan Gannon says veterans deserve special treatment.
I think we should be doing things special. There are veterans, and veterans' issues are different. And the way you deal with it is those who are working with those veterans are sponsored or backed by veterans that understand them to help them get through the courts. And without that, like example, a veteran's got PTSD, been in combat, and you get put into this, and been in jail, and he's out, and now he's going through the courts. What better person to have is somebody that sponsors him or works with him based on somebody that understands him? And I think veterans courts around the country, if I've worked, and we haven't really got into it, it's just something we've just presented, but I think we need to expand it.
Chief Justice on the Supreme Court, Mark Cady, agrees that problem-solving courts are a good thing. Last week, during his State of the Judiciary speech, Cady devotes a portion in support of Iowa's various PSCs.
When rehabilitation is achieved without imprisonment, justice is advanced and the expense of incarceration avoided. Currently, 47 problem-solving courts are operating in Iowa, including 20 adult courts, 4 mental health courts, and 1 veterans court. The mental health court in Scott County has been operating for just over a year, and in that short time, 19 individuals have successfully participated in the program. All of the individuals are connected with a doctor and are medication compliant. For these offenders, this achieves rehabilitation. This court is a small but important step in addressing the mental health needs of Iowans who have violated the law. It also shows how improving the process of justice leads to better outcomes and how expanding courts statewide would benefit more Iowans. It is also a step that shows the benefits of avoiding the expense of attempting to treat mental health needs through incarceration. In its brief existence, the Scott County Mental Health Court has generated a cost avoidance of over $300,000. This is what the process of justice must be for all Iowans.
This year, the judicial branch received another budget cut, making the expansion of problem-solving courts like more veterans treatment courts in Iowa unlikely. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature. I'm John Pemble. Sexual harassment in the workplace is being addressed across the country. In the Iowa Senate, sexual harassment led to a lawsuit by a former Senate communications director. In 2013, Kirsten Anderson submitted a memo about her concerns the Senate was fostering an environment of sexual harassment. Later that day, she was fired. Anderson believes it was because of her memo. A court agreed, and she was awarded $1.75 million by the state. This prompted many questions, mostly pointed at the leadership of the Iowa Senate. To ease concerns, former Iowa Senate President Mary Kramer volunteered to look into the Senate workplace. She was brought in with the support of the Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix. Hours after releasing a report about her findings, Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters visited Mary Kramer in her home. Kramer is also a member of Iowa Public Radio's Board of Directors.
Mary, can you tell me what it is you were commissioned to do, that you volunteered to do in the Senate?
Yes. There was a lawsuit that ended with a large settlement, which necessarily came from the state budget, and no one wanted that repeated. And so as it came along and they started to figure out how can we do that, they realized we can change the things that happen in our little team. But the state capitol is a very complex management job, and I don't think anybody that hasn't tried to be a leader there understands that. So since my life background sort of combined a couple of things, years of human resource leadership in the business world, as well as my political experience, I was at the capitol for 13 years. Seven of them, I was the president of the Senate. So I really had a pretty good grasp of what was going on there.
Kirsten Anderson was fired in 2013. In the document that you released, you say that things really haven't changed since she was fired when it comes to reporting sexual harassment. Tell me a little bit about what you found while you were digging into that.
Yes, I mostly listened, truthfully. People just came forward and said, there's this and this and this, and not many surprises, but nothing had changed since I left in 2003. And so I think maybe the Republican caucus team had done some things to improve their situation. But that's just one little team in the whole Capitol. So it seems to me we needed to set a goal, which I did. It is we needed to create and maintain a safe, respectful, and professional workplace for the Iowa legislature. That means we include all the teams that are engaged, including the media, including the lobby, including the elected officials, the secretary of the Senate team, on and on. They're just, both houses have five or six work teams. We have the people that come in for the session only. And for instance, the lobby who comes in to help educate and inform on issues, some of those people are paid, some of those people are volunteer, but they all contribute to the work culture at the Iowa legislature.
What is the most important takeaway from this document that you have come forward with?
That we need to make change, and I recommended what changes need to be made.
And what are those changes?
Well, first of all, there needs to be a clear path for people to report when there's a problem. Normally, you would just think, well, they go to their supervisor. Oh, that's fine if the supervisor is not a problem. So then where? Then who? Who do you trust? What? It's not a clear path. So let's make that a clear path. That's the first thing. The second thing is, after somebody shares a complaint, somebody needs to do something about it. So the person who receives the complaint, who will be designated to receive complaints, is obligated to respond, to investigate. If the investigation proves that there are truly issues that are founded, then there need to be clear consequences for each of these groups that are represented there. Clear, transparent consequences. And all of that is in my recommendation. In addition, they've hired now an HR professional, human resources professional, who will be in charge of implementing the recommendations, much harder than making them.
Let's say a situation comes up again, a situation similar to what happened with Kirsten Anderson, where somebody comes forward to their boss and that person is fired.
Well, that's clear retaliation. We have to be very specific that retaliation is not acceptable.
How do you make sure that there is accountability? I mean, how do you make sure that this resolution that you've put forward, how is there accountability? How is there any kind of teeth to make it work?
Well, let's say a member of the media has a complaint filed against them and that the reported and the issue is carried out. The obligation will be to notify that employer that this person has caused this problem. And up to and including the Secretary of the Senate, for instance, denying credentials. If it's an elected official, a public complaint gets filed with the Ethics Committee. And one of the things I learned is there's not a clear path to deal with that in terms of harassment. So that has to get taken care of. There needs to be reporting clear, investigation clear, consequences clear.
Senator Bill Dix, his name has been put out there a lot after this was filed. Some would say that he did not do a good job of bringing this forward. What happens to an elected official? Are they, you know, he's the majority leader. Is somebody like that demoted? Do they lose some kind of status?
There's two things. One is the elected official is really accountable only to the people that vote for them. Now, the obligation of the organization will be to let the people that elected him know what went on so they can make their own judgment. The Republican caucus votes for their majority leader, and they just had Mr. Dix will continue as of their meeting November. I can't quite remember when, but at any rate, that's their choice. And they've made it. So I think it's worthy to note, though, that Senator Dix is the person that approached me to make these changes and to report. And he agreed. Actually, he said to his colleagues, "I'm going to do whatever she says because we need to get this fixed." And as a matter of fact, he has.
You mentioned the culture really hasn't changed that much since you left in 2003.
Right.
How rampant was it when you were Senate president?
I think because I'm a woman and because I was recognized as having some HR experience, issues came to me. So I know that there are a number of issues that go on, and some of them I found really difficult. That was a different time in 2003. Still, I'm unhappy with myself that I didn't choose to institutionalize a process when I was there and could have impacted it. I just didn't.
You've seen some movements taking place in Congress. Senator Al Franken is somebody that comes to mind, where a number of people within his caucus came forward and said he should resign.
Yes.
If you were still a senator, would you come forward and say somebody that was in a position like Senator Dix should be resigning, who maybe didn't report everything that was going on in his caucus?
Yeah. You know, I wasn't there. I'm not going to make judgments about what I would do. I wasn't there. I don't know what he said or what he did, what he didn't do, what he felt was his job, because, in fact, this happened during a turnover time, and I think he felt he did take some steps to make a difference there. Whether they made enough difference, people can argue about that. But as I've said to people as I work on this, I didn't look back and investigate. That wasn't my job. I said, I'm not looking back. I'm not going that way. My job is to recommend change so that we are comfortable that it's a safe, respectful workplace, because everybody there deserves it. Iowans deserve it. And we need to make sure that's what's going to happen.
And speaking of talking about change, Senator Janet Peterson issued a statement today.
Oh, yes. I haven't heard that.
Okay. She said, in addition to the recommendations that you had, and I'm going to read from her comments here, ensure that all senators, staff, and others in the Capitol are provided with information about the duties and responsibility of the new Human Resources Director, including what specific role she will play in improving the workplace culture at the Capitol and enforcing anti-harassment policies and procedures.
Yes. She is absolutely right on that. And I'm really encouraged. Senator Peterson wrote me a letter and said, these are things I think are important that need to be included. I really agreed with her. And I was so encouraged that she stepped up and said, I want to be a part of this. She's right about this. Clarifying the role and the responsibilities of the HR professional there will be important in order to make sure that we implement these recommendations, which, as I say, is a much harder job than writing them down.
Former Senate President Mary Kramer with Iowa Public Radio's Clay Masters. She's talking about her report about sexual harassment in the Iowa Senate. The Iowa Senate has hired an outside consultant to provide harassment prevention training to lawmakers. Morton Consulting, a human resources consulting company, will give senators, staff, clerks, and others training later this month. Members of the House received harassment training recently from the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pemble.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
This summer, Jerry Foxhoven was appointed as the new director of the Department of Human Services. This comes at a time when the DHS is under scrutiny after the privatized management of Medicaid and the death of children in foster care. This week, Foxhoven appeared before two committees to address concerns about the DHS.
Frankly, about a third of all Iowans are, in one way or another, clients of the Department of Human Services directly. That's a lot.
On Wednesday, he was the guest speaker at the Senate Human Resources Committee to talk about the first 2 years of the state change to using private insurance companies to manage Medicaid.
Over a million unduplicated people, and those are the people that in many ways are struggling, you know, to survive and to do well. We manage the Medicaid program, which about a quarter of all Iowans are involved with, over a half a million Iowans, some of our most fragile people as well. And I see us, the Department of Human Services, as really having a dual role. One is that we provide a safety net, and the other is that we provide a ladder for people to get to success. And we focus on both of those really pretty strongly.
Last year, three managed care organizations lost millions of dollars. The biggest MCO, AmeriHealth Caritas, dropped out. In November, the state automatically enrolled AmeriHealth's 215,000 members to United Healthcare, but United said they couldn't handle all of those new members. To make matters worse, the other remaining MCO, AmeriGroup, says they aren't taking any new members. This leaves 10,000 Iowans without a health care company, so the state has resumed administering Medicaid for these people on a temporary basis. One of the stated reasons behind the privatization launched by then-Governor Branstad is that multiple MCOs can compete and provide a better service. For right now, there is only one Medicaid MCO anyone can sign up for, and that's through United Healthcare. This is creating a lot of confusion and concern, but DHS Director Jerry Foxhoven says he is very optimistic.
I am kind of almost a diagnosable optimist. You know, it's almost to the point of a mental condition. I really see the glass not only as half full, but I'm delighted to have it that full. And I can just tell you that I think in today's world, it's in many ways, I think we're in a perfect position for us to really take a good look at DHS and say, what can we, right now, when we're in an environment where there isn't any extra money, and better days are ahead, we know that. Right now, what can we do to improve what we're doing, get stuff off of our workers' plates, get what we're doing perfected a little better so that when things are better, we can make rational decisions about how to respond when there is more money available. So right now, as I meet with social workers, what I told them from the very beginning is, you know, we can't hire a whole bunch of more social workers. There isn't extra money right now, but we can make your life more livable. And I think they would tell you that we have already, and that we are doing that, and that we're hearing them, and that we're changing some things. And so I can just tell you this, that we are, I think we're turning the corner. I think we've got better days ahead, but I think we've had good days. You just haven't heard about them.
Some members are having disputes with their MCO denying service or medical care. The Des Moines Register investigated 200 of these cases where Iowans made an appeal through Iowa administrative law judges. It's a process that takes time and is legally complicated. Not all complaints from customers result in such dramatic legal action. Foxhoven says recently, customers are complaining less. But Senator Julian Garrett wants to know by how much.
I wonder, can you give us any numbers to illustrate that? In other words, what kind of complaints were we getting 6 months ago, a year ago, as compared to now, so we have something more than just a general statement?
You know, we're hoping to get there. I think it's difficult right now because when we look at, if you just look at total number of complaints, it would be difficult to figure out what would you consider to be a complaint and what would I. And part of that is, for instance, I had one person called me after AmeriHealth left and said, I have a different case manager. And I thought, gee, I thought that United was going to pick up the case managers. And so I called United and checked, and they had the same case manager. They'd hired that same case manager. I called the patient back, and they said, but she retired. Well, you know, I guess I wouldn't count that as a complaint. But she did initially, and so I'm not sure how we get to that. There are complaints, and I think there will always be, even if we do it. But we'll try to start measuring those better.
Senator Garrett presses the issue.
Well, did I misunderstand? I thought in your presentation you were saying that things are noticeably getting better. Is that right or not?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they are getting better, and I think that they will continue to get better. With our new director, I think it will be helpful. I think certainly payments got better in terms of current payments got better. They haven't for those older payments from 2016. That needs to improve yet.
In 2016, some medical companies were not receiving payments from MCOs. In some cases, it was because the pre-authorization between, say, a nursing home and an MCO was different. In others, incomplete payments were sent. Senator Garrett still wants Director Foxhoven to be more specific about his claims that things are getting better.
I'm kind of surprised that you can't give us anything more than just a general statement that, yeah, things are getting better, but no, even an estimate as to, you know, what's happening in terms of complaints, however you want to define that.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how you define it. I think if you read, for instance, the article from the Register about the appeals, while they don't say it in bold print, you know, there were more appeals when we were in fee-for-services before managed care than there are now. And we have a lot more patients now, a lot more patients because of the expansion population. And so, you know, whether you want to use that for a measure, but we have fewer appeals now than we had under fee-for-services when we had lots fewer patients. And so, again, we're not happy when there's any problems with people not getting care. But to your question, I think Director Randall is working on getting a handle, being able to come up with some kind of number and trend to kind of show you where we are on it.
Foxhoven is referring to Iowa's new Medicaid director, Michael Randall, who began in December. Boxhoven says he understands this still new privatized Medicaid program has issues to work out, but he says he will make it work.
I believe that we are down the managed care course at this point and that that's where we're gonna stay. And I'm going to do everything I can do to make sure it's successful for the people that we serve and for the state of Iowa.
DHS Director Jerry Foxhoven's visit with the Senate Human Resources Committee lasted an hour. Last year, two teenagers died while in the care of their foster parents. One of these cases comes from West Des Moines, where 16-year-old Natalie Finn was found barely alive in October. She was wearing an adult diaper on the floor of her sparse bedroom when police arrived. The floor was covered in urine. A medical examiner ruled she starved to death. In May, 16-year-old Sabrina Ray was found dead in her Perry home. She had also starved to death, and there are reports of her family members abusing her, including being drop-kicked down a flight of basement steps. These disturbing cases resulted in the Department of Human Services bringing in an outside agency to conduct a targeted child welfare review. The first of these two reviews was released last month. This initial review is designed to identify areas for immediate action. This report is the focus of Jerry Foxhoven's visit to a joint oversight committee on Thursday. Iowa Public Radio's Statehouse reporter Joyce Russell was there.
DHS Director Jerry Foxhoven said the department is asking a basic question.
How did the people that did this become foster parents to begin with?
In a packed committee room at the Capitol before the House and Senate oversight committees, Foxhoven explained some of the shortfalls in Iowa's foster care system and what he's doing to correct them. He says he wants new oversight of parents who foster kids and then adopt them. Also, currently choosing foster care parents is contracted out. Foxhoven says that's under review.
You know, if a parent isn't a great parent, God picked them, okay? And they don't have to be perfect. But if we picked them, they better be good. We're going to do a better job on that.
Foxhoven said the outside review highlights strong points at DHS, including a stable workforce of social workers who are well paid. But the report also concludes that morale is low and caseloads are too high. Democrats were quick to respond.
I read the report, right? And that's got some pretty bad things in there.
That's Cedar Rapids Senator Rob Hogue. From the report, Hogue cites inadequate training for workers, insufficient meetings with caseworkers, and cookie-cutter plans for troubled families. Foxhoven told Hogue he's working on efficiencies to ease caseloads, and he said workers are hopeful about their new leadership.
We're going to make the change, all the changes that need to be made.
That's good. Is there anything you need the Iowa legislature to do to help you to do that?
Not that I know of at this point.
That did not set well with other Democrats on the committee, including Representative Mary Wolf of Clinton.
You know, earlier you said you don't need anything more from the legislature, but it sounds to me like you need more caseworkers.
At what point will you be asking for these resources?
And that's Des Moines Democrat Matt McCoy. McCoy argued there are more than 1,100 fewer DHS workers now than in 2010. The agency took $16 million in cuts to field staff last year, and Governor Reynolds recommends more cuts to DHS to balance this year's budget.
You've got to tell the legislature what you need, and that might mean ticking off the governor's office and getting yourself fired, and that would be okay. Don't tell us everything's rosy when you need resources.
The Republican co-chair on the Oversight Committee, Senator Michael Breitbach, appreciated hearing what the outside review concluded DHS was doing right.
It was good to hear something positive. If you read the papers the last year or so, everything's been negative.
Director Foxhoven will appoint a task force of field workers, administrators, and child welfare advocates to look at the recommendations of the outside review and then, he says, expand it in response to last year's tragic deaths.
Iowa Public Radio's Statehouse reporter, Joyce Russell. In response to the review, a bill was just introduced to add that a member of the clergy can be a mandatory reporter of child abuse. This is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly podcast about the legislative session. I'm John Pimble. In the first 2 weeks of a session, legislators spend a lot of time in committees making the case for bills to move their way onto the chamber floor. This week, we will probably get something scheduled for debate. It could be a water quality bill. Last session, one passed in the Senate and another in the House. We'll see which one makes it to the floor. It's likely to happen soon because Governor Reynolds has stated numerous times she wants one of these water quality bills to be the first one she signs into law. We'll have more about these bills next week on this show. As I make this show, I get a lot of help from my Iowa Public Radio News colleagues. Thanks to our State House reporter, Joyce Russell, Morning Edition host, Clay Masters, and reporter, Katerina Sestarik. Our talk show team producers are busy with us too, Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, and Ben Statton. We also get help from our talk show hosts, Ben Kiefer and Charity Nebbe. Big shout out to Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson as well for helping us out. Iowa Public Radio's news program director is Catherine Perkins. Edit support comes from Iowa Public Radio news director Michael Leland. Every Friday, a new episode of Under the Golden Dome will pop up in your podcast program or the Iowa Public Radio app or our webpage, iowapublicradio.org. Listen in the place you feel the most comfortable. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.